You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. A very good Wednesday morning to you. Today is the 19th day of February. It's a holy day in the Marine Corps. And today, 75 years ago, the Marines and Sailors of the 5th Amphibious Corps that was composed of the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th Marine Divisions and all their supporting units went ashore on the island that was known as Island X, ultimately became known as the island of Iwo Jima, Sulfur Island, the Volcanic Island, the first part of mainland Japan that Americans would set foot on. So we're going to go kind of there today. Over the course of the years, I've collected some incredible stuff, and so you're going to get a chance to listen to about 4 hours, over 4 hours of it. And we'll start off with just the live reporting of that day. So you'll hear it as Americans heard it, sitting in their living rooms, at work, or in their cars, wherever they heard it, that another island in the Pacific had been invaded by this time the Marine Corps, as both the Army and the Marine Corps played leapfrog across the Pacific. So the way you're going to hear this is as follows. The first thing you'll hear is reporters doing play-by-play as they move from the ships to the beach. It gives me the chills every time I think of it. I mean, we've seen the pictures, right? And now you're going to hear, you know, a reporter talking about, you know, he talks about his family at one point, talks about he hopes he sees them at one point. And so it's, you know, it's amazing. And then you hear the sounds of the naval guns shooting as they go by on their way to the beach, right? As they go by on their way to the beach. So you'll hear that. You'll hear other reports of from reporters, I want to say on D+3 or so. You'll hear something that was written by Secretary Forrestal. So they cut into, the, I think, the Cleveland Symphony is the recording that we hear. And with a message from the Secretary of Navy, James Forrestal, who will ultimately say, because of that flag, there will be a Marine Corps for the next 500 years. You'll hear a report from a Navy lieutenant commander who's in charge of photographers on Iwo Jima. And he is one of the first people back in Washington, D.C., who sits down in a studio in front of a microphone. So you'll hear that. So you hear kind of a kaleidoscope trying to bring it to you from the day of the invasion, kind of back news reporting. And we'll do that for probably close to, you know, 50 minutes. And then you'll begin to hear interviews with guys that were there. And the first interview is with Cal Humphrey, probably one of the favorite interviews I've ever done. Cal is the uncle of Jess Humphrey, a friend of mine. He and I worked together at 1MEF at Camp Pendleton. Jess lives in San Diego, and he's got a brother in the Marine Corps. And his father, Robert Humphrey, wrote Leadership for a New Millennium, and you should check that out. He's a legend. Right? A leadership legend is Bob Humphrey. He was a first lieutenant on Iwo Jima, and his brother, Cal, was a PFC. Yep. And so the Humphrey family represented on Iwo Jima a little bit, but you're going to hear, you're going to hear Cal Humphrey and just his story how he got in the Marine Corps, how he got to Iwo Jima. You're going to hear him talk about meeting and knowing John Bazelon, drinking beer, 5-cent beer with him in Hawaii, as they trained and got ready as part of the 5th Marine Division to go ashore on Iwo Jima. So you'll hear from Cal Humphrey. After that, you'll hear an interview I did with Woody Williams. Woody, retired chief warrant officer, and he is from West Virginia, and I met him at the Marine Corps Marathon a year or two ago and got to hang out with him a little bit. Just a delightful man. And he tells the story of how he became a flamethrower. And he's not a big dude at all. And so you'll get to hear that story. And just a wonderful guy and a delightful guy. And then you'll hear an interview that I did less than a month ago, probably a couple weeks ago, with a gentleman by the name of Tony Kappa. And Tony lives in San Clemente, California. And I just met him two nights ago at the Iwo Jima dinner at Camp Pendleton. I'm sorry, last Saturday night. And so he was born and raised in Inglewood, California. When the war started, he was an aircraft riveter in an aircraft factory near his house, and thought the Navy could use his skills. And so he went out downtown to the MEP station to join the Navy. Guy walks into the room. They've got their folder standing there. And the guy says, "U9, you're now Marines. Go through that door." And he did. And he becomes part of a machine gun team in the 4th Marine Division. So they would land, on the right side as you're looking at the beach, the landing beaches, 4th Marine Division on the right, 5th Marine Division on the left, 3rd Marine Division, not supposed to go ashore, but I want to say they landed on D+3, was not long before, 3rd Marine Division went ashore. So you'll hear from Tony Kappa. And he tells, towards the end of the interview, he tells a story about being discharged on the pier in San Diego, which I'd never heard in my life. Yeah, he said, we came down the gangway, the ladder on the external part of the ship, walked down to the pier, and, you know, they gave us our discharge papers. I don't even think they called it a DD-214 then. And I said, "Well, what'd you do with your rifle?" He said, "Well, hell, I probably could have kept it. Just got on the train with it." But he walked from the pier, walked down to the train station, and got on the train and went home. Went, you know, just up the coast to Los Angeles, and was home from World War II and done with the Marine Corps. So you'll hear from Tony Kappa, and then you'll hear an interview that I found on the internet. And I was listening to interviews one day, and I heard this one. This guy's name is Don Mates, and I think Don fights on Guam and Iwo Jima. And then he comes home and he just does great things for the rest of his life. And you know, and so I mean, to me, it's no wonder why they are the greatest generation. But if you're like me and you grew up reading about the history of the Marine Corps, Iwo Jima is an incredible place. And I heard a number. The other night, and I just want to validate it before I – 83 medals of honors were awarded in World War II to Marines. 21 of them are awarded on Iwo Jima. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. So, yeah – now, unbelievable. Yeah, it's an incredible battle. The island still very much today as it was then, with the exception of the modifications they made to put in the jet runway. And but you know, Marines go back there on a regular basis. I've never been, sadly, but a bunch of my friends have. And so it's a pretty amazing experience when people go to actually be on that island. And I've always, you know, been somewhat of a collector of things Iwo Jima. I have a stamp sitting here on my desk. I have, let's see, there's the print of the 7th War Bond Drive. I have a print of the flag raising that sits here. Let's see, what else here is in the office? There's sand and the map from Iwo Jima that sits here in my office. That's 1, 2, 3. So that's what's in my office right now. But I've read the accounts of the battle. I've collected pictures. I've collected maps. And I'll put a link to the maps that I've collected. And what I want you to see, though, is if you scroll through the maps, you'll see the 4th Division on the right flank. The 5th Division goes up Mount Suribachi, then they go up the far side of the island, and the 3rd Marine Division is in the middle. Just pay attention. Just scroll. Just flip through very quickly the maps with your mouse, right? Just kind of roll through them, and you'll see the daily progress. And watch how little progress the 4th Marine Division makes on the right flank. They run into just the most dense part of the Japanese defense and in close terrain, and it's amazing to watch. And that's what Tony Kappa was a part of. He was a part of the 4th Marine Division. So it's honestly an amazing battle to read about. You know, there's all kinds of guys whose names pop out at me. Tony Stein, Corporal, who's a recipient of the Medal of Honor. He took a air-cooled Browning 30 caliber machine gun from an airplane, and he made this thing called a Stinger. It had a bipod. It had it had kind of the hand grip on the back of it, not the butterfly grip, but the single hand grip. He made this thing called it a Stinger. Actually, no, on the back was an M1 stock. He makes 8 trips back to the beach to get ammunition and takes out, I can't remember how many bunkers before he's killed. Manila John Bazelon, Medal of Honor recipient, had gone home, had raised money, and then asked to go back. And he's killed on the beach on the first day. A guy named Jack Loomis played baseball at Baylor and football, played in the National Football League for the New York Giants. He's leading his platoon or company towards the end of the fighting in the northern end of the island, and he steps on a landmine, and he's killed. Not killed right away, but ultimately succumbs to his injuries. And the stories of just individual heroism, of the brutality, you know, close to 60,000 people there and no prisoners of war taken. Very few. The Marines took very few. And then ultimately, I want to say 1,600 or so Japanese come out of the caves, ultimately. So I think it's one of the most fascinating battles in the history, certainly of the Marine Corps, for a lot of different reasons. We're going to take a little trip back there today as we remember the 75th anniversary of that battle and the people that, you know, gave the only life they'll ever live. To their country on that island. I saw a quote earlier in the week from a gentleman who was one of the last 3 survivors of the USS Arizona. And he said, you know, what the hell? Everybody has to be someplace, and that's where I was. Not everybody would be that forgiving to history. But, it is in fact true. You know, by hook or crook, Tony Capa thought he was going to be working metal in the Navy because that's what he did for a living. And lo and behold, he's humping machine gun ammunition as a Marine on the island of Iwo Jima. And everybody in his Marine, in his machine gun team, gets killed on like day one or day two. And he winds up making it through the entire fight. So it's the stories were unbelievable. And with that said, I will get out of the way. Stand by for a special today on Iwo Jima. The whole thing will run about 4 hours. And then it will repeat itself. All the links to these interviews are in today's post. All right. So you can go, and if you miss one or you have to leave halfway through it, if you go into the post, you'll see the name of the interview, and then it'll say click here to listen. And you can click on that, and you'll go to the post, and you can listen to it there. So there you have it. And now, without further ado, the sounds of what it was like to go ashore on Iwo Jima 75 years ago today. Oh, and one more thing. A week from today, what will that be, the 9th, the 26th? Yeah, next Wednesday. What you'll hear is I have a whole collection of interviews that start with Irish historian Stephen Foley, and then Colonel Mary Reinwald, who's the editor of Leatherneck magazine. She served on the Hewley board on every time they've convened it. She served on it. So you'll hear a couple interviews from her. You'll hear the director of, I think, the Marine Corps History Division, Don Niemeyer. You'll hear him in the midst of the controversy when we realized that John Bradley was not in that. And then ultimately, later on, we find out that Rene Gagnon is not in it either. And, I mean, pretty amazing, you know, revision of history relative to that flag raising, right? That flag raising with all the turmoil that comes with it, right? And the mystery that comes with it. You know, you have, you know, John Bradley's son, James Bradley, who writes the book Flags of Our Father and exposes a whole generation of people to, you know, the Battle of Iwo Jima. And then Clint Eastwood takes that. And he makes two movies out of it, one from the American perspective and one from the Japanese perspective. And then, you know, we find out that, yeah, he wasn't there, which to me is fascinating in of itself. And in those interviews, you'll hear me saying that, hey, I believe John Bradley knew that, you know, that he wasn't in there. And I believe that he sat there and looked at that statue and said, how can these idiots not notice that my uniform wasn't close to the person they say is me? I didn't wear anything that looked like that. How can nobody notice that in all the pictures that were taken up there that day? And so I'm it's fascinating stuff. And so you'll hear a couple of interviews with Stephen Foley. You'll hear a couple of interviews with Mary Reinwald. And so you'll hear as the drama that surrounded Lo all these years later, the flag raising on Mount Suribachi on February 23rd of 1945, right? It becomes current events and current American history as we discover that, hey, those guys weren't really in the image. And then there's guys who were and came home and never, ever, ever said a word about it. Amazing stuff. So again, now, for real this time, all right, the sights and sounds of Iwo Jima 75 years later today, starting with a reporter headed from an assault ship to the beach right now.